Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nice to have you. We are reaching towards the end of chapter 5. Hey, Lou, how's it going?
Very good. How are we doing today?
Good. So we have only, I think, 5 or 6 verses left for chapter 5. And what I'm going to do is today we'll talk about verse 24, 25, and 26. And then next time we'll talk about verse 27, 28, which gives the beginnings of how to meditate. And 29 wraps up chapter 5. Mm-hmm. Just as a follow-up, just so you're all aware, you know, my wife and I were having a discussion with somebody who said, was fighting about religion and different religions and spirituality and the difference between religion and spirituality and having a discussion with us. And it's important to note that the Gita does not say to the people who read it, you have to follow this religion or you have to follow this God.
Right.
Very important to keep in mind. What the Gita says is that each one of us has within us a piece of this life force that is consciousness, existence, and bliss, and that it is our duty to become one with that Atman. And it goes as far as that. And the whole concepts up to now, if you look back at the first 5 chapters that we've done, and chapter 6, which we're going to do next time, is basically talking about how to meditate and how to get to the Atman. So that's chapter 6. So up to now, what have we done? Everything we've done is basically preparation for this meditation, okay? So we said first one was, first chapter was basically to say, why exactly are we doing this? What exactly was Arjuna facing? He's facing a dilemma on the battlefield, doesn't know what to do. He's trained for this. He puts his arms down, says, you know, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. All of us have gone through that at some point. Then he says, Krishna says, do karma yoga, which he's saying, you know, gets rid of your desires, because it is the desires and your thoughts that are constantly preventing you from going inside and looking at your Atman. So the first 5 chapters basically have to do with getting to the position where you can even begin to meditate. Otherwise, you know, my wife and I meditate, and when we close our eyes, even now, you know, with having studied, when I say even now, I'm saying I've studied this for like 15 years. And even now, with all the studies and everything that my wife and I have done, thoughts keep crossing our mind, desires, wishes. As I was saying last time, our nostrils are open, our ears are open, even though our eyes are closed and mouth is closed and skin is not touching anything. But those two apertures alone are constantly seeking out different things and says, what about that? What about that? It's the desires. Now, desires, kama, kama is called desires in Sanskrit. Kama says, I can smell coffee. How nice it would be to have a cup of coffee right now, right? So all of these senses essentially light a fire under the desire, which goes straight to the mind, and the mind says, okay, let's go, you know, organs of action. Get up, start walking towards the smell. Maybe you'll find a cup of coffee over there. And then comes krodha, which is anger. If you don't get what you desire, say, I went there, but the thing was empty. There was no coffee there. I'm angry. So kama and krodha are like husband and wife going together everywhere, or business partners. Mm-hmm. So in verse 24, chapter 5, Krishna says he's talking to an advanced yogi, not a yogi like you are or I am, who is just beginning. This is an advanced yogi, and he says he who is happy within, notice he uses the word within 3 times here. He who is happy within, he who rejoices within, he who is illumined within, that yogi gains the Atman by becoming the Atman. So he says 3 times within. So what he's emphasizing, everything in the Gita, every word is important. He's emphasizing the word within, meaning in order to become the Atman, you have to look within. Can't get it by looking outside. How beautiful this is, how beautiful that is. I'm going to a temple, going to a mosque. Doesn't work. You have to go within yourself. So an analogy that is given in the scriptures is that each Atman is like a river, and it's racing towards the ocean, and it has its own independence as long as it's racing. It has its windy curves, it has rocks in the middle, it's deep at one end, shallow at another end, but ultimately when it comes to the ocean, there's a delta, and it pours into the ocean, and during that time where it pours in, it's usually muddy and brown, and the river and the ocean are mixing together. But as the water continues in the ocean, what happens? It loses its identity. It becomes the ocean. It's no longer the river, no right. longer the Ganges or the Mississippi River. It now becomes the ocean. And when you look at the water, you cannot tell. In the beginning, yes, you can still tell that this is not salty water. This is coming from the river. This is salty water. It's from the ocean, but it's mixing together. And as you get further and further away from the delta, that Mississippi water or Ganges water, does the Mississippi run into the ocean? I think it
does.
Yes, it does. There's probably
at the Gulf,
every river. Mm-hmm. Every river rushes. There was only one river that I know of that did not go into the river. But anyway, so yeah, it becomes the ocean, and then you can't tell the difference. And right. what he's saying here is that that yogi gains the Atman by becoming the Atman. You cannot think of the Atman. You cannot perceive the Atman. You cannot see the Atman. You cannot hear the Atman. You can only become the Atman. Very important lesson to learn. And he says all of these disturbances for this advanced yogi, when he gets past them, he's happy within, he's illumined within, he rejoices within, because rejoicing is a natural force of the Atman. That's bliss. It's continued bliss, total peace of mind. There's no voices in the mind, there's no sounds, everything is very quiet. It's Sat, Chit, Anand. Existence, consciousness, and bliss is what you are. What bothers it, what disturbs it, is when you come under the sway of Kama and Krodha. Kama is desire, Krodha is anger, and these things come because of your contacts from the senses. And he sort of repeats it over and over again for these five verses. And believe me, in the sixth verse, you won't see this anymore. Mm-hmm. He's telling you so that he's emphasizing again and again that it's these desires that block you from getting to be one with the Atman. It's the rajas. It's the raga and the dvesha. The rajas is the activity within you that says, I got to do, I got to do, I got to do. And the raga is the likes. I like this, I like this, I like this. I like coffee, I want coffee. I hate this, I'm angry at it. So you see about an object, you think about it, you hear about it, right? And you crave it. Yeah. First thing in the morning, you wake up, you go out, you're going camping or whatever, outside in the wilderness, and you've got a camp. And then you say, this is all great, but you know what? Right now, I would love a cup of coffee. Or your friend who you've gone camping with says, hey, you know what? I had the best cup of coffee at Starbucks the other day. What happens is your mind, even though you're not smelling the coffee or you're hearing about the coffee, goes to your mind says, coffee, 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 coffee. That sound of that desire impacts your peace of mind. So it comes when it's a craving from the desire that comes when you remember an object, when you hear about it, when you see it. And if none of those are there, let's say you don't see the cup of coffee, you don't hear about it, you don't smell it.
Right.
Just the mind alone can think about it.
Yep.
It can say, you know what, I don't smell it, I don't hear about it, but I'm thinking that this would be the time I would be craving a cigarette and a cup of coffee. Those people who are smokers, first thing in the morning, they die if they don't have a combination of both their coffee and the cigarette. Today, you don't see that many smokers, so it's not a good analogy to give because a lot of younger people don't even know what you're talking about when you say cigarettes and smoking. Right, right, Lou?
Right. Yeah. Well, more than we'd like, though.
Yeah, it's true. So, krodha is the unpleasurable, krodha is anger. An unpleasurable experience, once the mind experiences it, not the intellect, it's the mind that has all these wishes and desires and emotions, says, I didn't like that. That was not good. He hurt my feelings. he said this to me, and it upset me because I was embarrassed in front of all these people. I don't like him. That was an unpleasurable experience, which starts to develop unpleasant feelings within you, which then becomes anger. So right. The next time you see this person, you say, he hurt me last time. I'm angry at him. Deepak Chopra and I were talking once, and Deepak said, he gave an analogy. He said, you know, a dog gets kicked by somebody, and a human gets kicked by that same person. And then they separate. They don't see each other again, the dog and that individual who kicked the dog, for 5 years.
Yep.
At the end of the 5 years, the dog will go and bite him because he kicked him 5 years ago.
Right.
And just, this is just an example that
yeah.
a dog may not. But the human being will also go and punch him because he kicked him last time, 5 years ago. The only difference is that the dog did not spend 5 years obsessing about this guy who kicked him, whereas the human did.
Yeah.
So that is the difference between us and other animals, insects, birds, etc., that we tend to, our mind plays this krodha, this kama and krodha together, desire and anger, over and over again. Say, he insulted me. I don't like him. It builds up, and what does it do? Take away your peace of mind.
Yeah.
So a person who can withstand these raga dvesha desires, I like this, I don't like this, and control your reaction to it by not responding to it, don't get carried away, is on his way to becoming a yogi. And as this verse says, an advanced yogi is happy within, he rejoices within, and he's illumined within. And getting rid of this completely is only possible for a self-realized person. But as you become more self-developed, even though if you're not self-realized, just getting that development, you, it gets you immensely forward in your negotiations and how you do with the world. So practice controlling your tongue, practice controlling your actions. Don't let yourself speak and say all kinds of things that you shouldn't be saying. Control your actions, control your tongue. Intense raga, intense likes, is kama. Intense dislike is krodha. Raga dvesha, intense dvesha, intense dislike is krodha. Such a person who is able to withstand such forces is really happy, and it enables him to do vairagya. Vairagya means renunciation, renunciation of my likes, my dislikes, and therefore renunciation of my kama and krodha. So that was verse 24, where he's talking about advanced yogis. And verse 25, he's talking about yogis who are not so advanced. So he says in this verse 25, that vairagya from sense pleasures is freedom from the desires of the senses. He says, such a person who has destroyed his sins and his dualities, dualities means this and that, raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes, who has destroyed his dualities and is self-controlled in his senses, revels in the welfare of other people. So he talks about sins here. Sins doesn't mean what an average person has been taught to believe so far. We've talked about this before. The definition, you can write this down and keep remembering it. The definition of sins is mental agitations, which are caused by indiscriminate and impulsive actions or thoughts. Indiscriminate and impulsive actions which or thoughts which cause you, bounce back on you and cause you mental agitations is sin. So he says such a person who has destroyed his sins and who has destroyed his dualities, meaning raga and dvesha, the pull of I like this, I don't like this, they have no mental agitation, no sin, no papa, no disturbance of the mind. And he therefore goes into a state of Brahma Nirvana. He becomes Brahma. He becomes the Atman. His happiness is in the Atma itself. He desires, his desires are eliminated or reduced. His happiness is not from his mind or senses, but from within. There's no desire or motivation for anything on the outside. So the ignorance is what is the basic impurity in the mind? Ignorance of the self. But because the mind is constantly wandering with its desires. And there was a holy man who was known as Mullah Nasrullah. And Nasrullah, he was sitting on a donkey, and the donkey started running, as donkeys are wont to do often, just started running aimlessly. And the Mullah was holding on tightly for dear life, worried about falling down. And as he's rushing past one of his friends, the guy says, "Hey, Mullah, where are you going?" And Mullah turns to him and says, "Don't ask me, ask the donkey. He's the one who's taking me."
Yeah.
So it's the mind is like that. You don't know where you're going. Your mind takes you there. And often, as said in the previous verse, the eye sees something, the mind follows, and then therefore you follow.
Right.
Or the mind thinks of something, the eyes look for it, and then the eyes and mind together make you go along. The mind and the eyes together, or the mind and the senses together, are the donkey of Mullah Nasrullah. So that's verse 25. Verse 26 is, free from kama and krodha, desire and anger, and in control of his senses, those who have controlled their mind, those who are self-realized, for them there is Brahma Nirvana or moksha. Same thing is again, you know, the Gita often repeats again and again so that it's firmly in your mind that you have it there. So don't get impatient. This is very necessary and the benefits are tremendous. Ignorance is the basic impurity here. As we said, that is the one that causes kama and krodha, wants pleasure and gets irritated when it doesn't get it. The ignorant seek pleasure all the time. All the time. The contact, recognize that pleasure comes when there's a contact, right? If I've never had coffee before,
right,
to keep on the same example, and somebody hands me a cup, I look at it, it's black. He says, "You want to put milk? You want to put sugar?" He says, "I don't know. I've never had this before." I say, yeah, put some milk, put some sugar. That's how I drink it. Okay, puts it in. He says, "You've never drank coffee?" "No, it's hot, huh?" "Yeah." "Okay, try it." So I try it. And immediately there is a contact between my sense organ, which is my tongue, and my nose, which smells the coffee. And I drink it. And it's an example. I mean, we could talk about sugar or other things which I eat. But then my sense organ says, when there's a contact with that sense object, I get immediate pleasure.
Right.
And I want it. So if I keep doing this and I start to get dependent on that coffee, the pleasure comes with immediate contact with that pleasure object. Unfortunately, what happens is the mind and those pleasure sense organs of yours continue to seek it day after day after day and always. You wake up and immediately you start to look around. What happens? Your mind is restless. Mm-hmm. It's bored. It says, what sense object should I pursue today, right now? What sense? And your whole life is geared towards seeking out sense objects and sense pleasures. So you may say, no, that's not true. I go to work. But why do you go to work? You don't go to work because you're doing karma yoga.
Right.
And you're saying, I'm doing this as a volunteer. I'm doing it for the society. You are going to work, most of us anyway. I'm going to work. You're going to work because you say, this is creating a living for me.
Right.
What does that mean? Means you're getting in money, and that money you're doing in order to buy sense objects. You may say, no, I'm buying it for a roof over my head. That's a sense object, because it exposed, without that roof, without that house, you're exposed to the elements. So you say, I need it. So even going to work is, in a sense, a way of seeking pleasure for yourself,
right.
Any form of money. So any pleasure or contact with a sense object is only momentary. It's instantaneous, but it's only momentary. It doesn't last for a long time. Kama and krodha are associated, so it keeps going on and on your whole life. From the time you're born to the time you die, you have this desire and anger that you don't get it, or arrogance, or jealousy, or delusion that this is all it is. So kama and krodha cannot be dropped by willpower alone, friends. You can't say, oh, I'm going to not drink that cup of coffee and it'll work. It will work temporarily, but not permanently, until your intellect gets involved. Your intellect relies heavily on logic and explanation. The mind relies heavily on emotion. You can convince your intellect why something is not good for you or why you shouldn't be doing it. And if the intellect logically explains, it can drop the desire. Mm-hmm. So right knowledge produces wisdom. So intellect understands logic. And now we have completed verse 26.
Can I ask a
Next
question?
Time we'll... Please, Luke.
Am I right in assuming, though, to keep the analogy going, a cup of coffee, you can have and enjoy a cup of coffee. The trick is not to become attached to it and not to create this cycle of desire and need for it.
Yes, yes, absolutely right, because we've discussed also that, you know, when you say no raga, no dvesha, no likes, no dislikes, what about a self-realized person? Did Jesus or Buddha or Krishna not enjoy, you know, their favorite foods or their favorite drinks? Or I believe Christ also drank wine, am I right?
Yes.
I don't know.
I think so.
But,
yeah.
I mean, when he had a glass of wine, a good wine or versus a bad wine, nobody can say that to him it just all tasted like water. No. I'm sure if Christ had a good glass of wine, he'd say this was a good glass of wine. But like you said, that constant repetition of, oh my God, that wine was great, or whatever food Buddha or Krishna ate, there's no question that they didn't like it. But they wouldn't be obsessed by it, saying, I want that again. Let me go back to that same lady who gave me that food last time to ask for alms because they didn't cook themselves. They just went and begged for food. Let me go to that same lady again and maybe she'll give me that same thing. They just continued about it without even thinking again and again. They pushed it out of their mind.
And the attempted austerity is what doesn't work, because that's trying to do it through willpower. That's trying to deny the desire. That doesn't work. You have to learn how to control the desire, how to manage the desire.
Very true. Because austerity, without understanding why you're doing it, results in frustration, and anger. You know, if you see a lot of religious people in a lot of religions are married, and that's accepted in that religion. Mm-hmm. Other religions may say marriage is forbidden, and Oftentimes, not every time, if you deny these bodily pleasures without understanding why you're doing it, it will lead to frustration and rage, and that will often come out in the form of other perversions or other desires. Now, there are religions that says, hey, you know, you can get married. In the Hindu religion, priests are allowed to get married unless they choose not to.
Right.
So there are wise saints and sadhus who have said, I don't want to. They will put on orange clothes, saffron-colored clothes, and go up into the Himalayas and stay celibate their whole lives. It is not required of them, but they choose to do that. That, with the understanding of why they're doing that, and that's a whole other discussion, why they're doing it, then they're able to, their intellect is able to say, yes, it would be great to have a companion. It would be nice to have somebody cook for me instead of staying up here in the Himalayas in this cave eating roots and stuff. But the what I'm looking to do, which is to become one with the Atman, cannot be accomplished if I have a partner, a wife, or somebody over here.
Yep.
Hope that answers your question.
It does. Yes, absolutely. All right.
All right, friends. Thank you so much. And please do visit us. You want to do your spiel, Lou?
Yeah, head on over to Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist on Facebook. That's where you find the video podcasts of everything we've done here. But you can also find them on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere you shop for your podcasts. You can also get the audio-only version, so you can take us along with you while you're on a drive. But the Facebook page is where you can communicate with us. So by all means, leave a note and ask a question, and we'll get back to you.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.